translation by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thus the sage, being dissatisfied at heart, at once began to reflect. Because he knew the essence of religion, and he said within himself. So please repeat after me. Thus the sage, being dissatisfied at heart, at once began to reflect. Because he knew the essence of religion. And he said within himself. And then there's a semicolon because it's continued in the next verse. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The sage began to search out the cause of not being satisfied at heart. Perfection is never attained until one is satisfied at heart. This satisfaction of heart has to be searched out beyond matter. Om jnanati mirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun malitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobistam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yuta padal kamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tamstajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhara Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pracharini, Nirvishesha Sunyavadi, Paschadeshatharini. So, the translation again. Thus the sage, being dissatisfied at heart, at once began to reflect, because he knew the essence of religion, and he said within himself. So, the context of this verse is in the verses prior to this and the verses after this. There'll be a description about the reasons why Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. In the third verse of this chapter, the sages, headed by Shonaka Rishi, presented a question to Suta Goswami. They said, in what period and at what place was this first begun? This meaning, Srimad Bhagavatam being spoken. And why was it taken up? Why did Krishna, Dvaipayana Vyas, the great sage, get the inspiration to complete this literature? So they asked this question. A relevant question. Srimad Bhagavatam is such an important literature. So why was it spoken? So in these verses, we are reading the primary reasons. And that reason is being described in this verse. Srila Vyasadeva is feeling dissatisfied at heart. It is explained that Vyasadeva, in his ashram, Badrik Ashram, which is Badrinath in the Himalayas, he went to take his bath in the river Sarasvati. And while he was in the river, he was not feeling pacified at heart. He was feeling dissatisfied. And feeling like this, what did he do? He began to reflect. This is an important part of the spiritual progress. One goes through this process of constant reflection in terms of the condition of one's heart and the progress of one's spiritual life. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gave some practical advice for the sadhakas. He said, on every Ekadasi, the devotee should take stock of his progress. Taking stock of what's unfavorable on his spiritual path, what is hampering him on his spiritual path. And through that reflection, search out what may be the reasons for such a condition of the heart. And in this way, through constant reflection, one advances. The opposite to this is indifference. He said, the worst mentality in any relationship is indifference. My son sometimes, he has a saying, I can't be bothered. And when he says that, I can't be bothered, I get very upset with him. I said, you have to be bothered. That should not be something that exists in your dictionary. Because indifference is very detrimental to all relationships. And the same goes very much so for our relationship with Krishna. We can never be indifferent. We always need to be searching out, wanting to find out how we can advance more, how we can connect more with Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada's purport is very short. Only three statements. But each of these statements are packed with so much of meaning. Once I heard a devotee say, Srila Prabhupada's purports are deceivingly simple. Deceivingly simple because on the surface it may seem, you know, quite simple. But there are so many layers of meanings in Srila Prabhupada's statements. And as we advance and as layers of anarthas get removed from our heart, then more and more of those layers of meanings will become manifest in our understanding and consciousness. So one of the very profound statements Srila Prabhupada makes in the purport is, he said, this satisfaction of heart has to be searched out beyond matter. That means if we want to achieve the satisfaction of the heart, don't look for it in matter. It's a fruitless endeavor. It'll bear no fruit. In the 60s, there was an iconic moment and song with the Rolling Stones, Mick Jagger, prancing on stage. And he used to sing, I can't find no satisfaction. And I try, and I try, and I try, and I try. Four times he says, I try. And I thought that was a very apt representation of our endeavors for satisfaction through matter. We can try and try and try, but it'll be a useless endeavor. Prahlad Maharaj describes this endeavor as chewing the chewed. You'll chew but there's no juice left. I'm not sure if all of us have had the experience of chewing sugarcane. But it's a sugarcane, when you chew, you bite the cane and some juice comes out. But after a while, when all the juice is gone, it's just something empty that's just useless. So material life is like that. We chew and chew, trying to get more juice out, but there's no juice there. Material life has been described like there's always a fly in the soup. Or the Vedic version, there's always sand in the sweet rice. You want to enjoy it, that soup, but you see a fly, it spoils all your enjoyment. Or the sweet rice looks so appealing, but when you take it, there's sand in there. Material life can be described like that. In the Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, the 30th verse, Krishna uses the words, or Arjuna, nimitani viparitani. You seek one cause, but what do you get? Something opposite. That's how material life is. And Krishna, he's put a big stamp on this material world. Sometimes when one is doing filing or administration, you finish using the file, you put a big stamp, paid. Or big stamp, actioned. Or to be filed. So Krishna, he has put a big stamp on this material world. Bang! Dukailam Ashashvatam. It is a place of repeated birth and misery. Krishna has stamped it. That's the quality of the material world. It's a place of repeated birth and misery. So how foolish are we that despite Krishna putting that stamp and declaring it so boldly that this is the position in the material world, we still try to extract something else, something different. So this material world will never satisfy us. And spiritual life starts at that point. When one has the sense that I can't move, I can't function, I'm so constrained, this is just too much for me, I've got to search out a higher meaning, a higher end cause. That's where spiritual life starts. Srila Prabhupada says that repeatedly. So, that is our condition. And the Srimad Bhagavatam does the same thing. The Srimad Bhagavatam, verse after verse, it says in the 10th verse of the 2nd chapter, which we've just read recently, Karmasya Nindriya Priti Labo Jivita Yavata Jivasya Tatva Jignasa Narto Yascha Karma Bhir. Life's desires should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation. Since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth, nothing else should be the goal of one's work. The very first aphorism in the Vedanta Sutra is Atato Brahma Jignasa. Atato, now. It starts off with now. Now that you have got a human birth, seek out Brahman. Don't waste your time. This human form of life is very rare. Most of us fail to appreciate our rarities. In the Vedic literatures, this form of life is compared to be like a bud, a flower bud. And that bud, two things can happen. One is that bud can shrink, shrivel, and die. Or that bud could open up and bloom. So, the human consciousness is not meant for shriveling up and perishing. The human consciousness is meant for opening up and blooming completely. And anyone who is in that, got that opportunity but fails to realize, it's a wasted form of life. There's a famous English saying, don't die with your song inside of you. Don't die with that song inside of you. Our song, this opportunity, is we've got this opportunity to sing a beautiful song. We should not die wasting this beautiful opportunity. So there's so many verses in the Bhagavatam. Ata pumbir dvija shrestas vanashrama vibhagasha stvanustitasya dharmasya samsidir aritoshana. O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve of discharging the duties prescribed for one's occupation according to caste and division and orders of life is to please the personality of Godhead. So, if this satisfaction cannot be found in matter, where should one look? In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the sages presented 6 questions to Suta Goswami. And the first question was, what is the ultimate good for all people? In yesterday's class, Rasa Mandala Prabhu was explaining the principles of Shreyas and Prayas. Prayas means immediate good. And Shreyas means ultimate good. So this question was posed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. What is the ultimate good? Meaning, where can we find our ultimate satisfaction? And the answer to that question was given in the 6th verse of the 2nd chapter. Savai pumsa paro dharmo yato bhakti adokshaje ahoituki apratyata yayatma supersedati. The translation of this verse is, the supreme occupation, dharma, for all men is that which leads to the loving devotional service to the Lord. To fully satisfy the self, that service should be unmotivated and uninterrupted. So the verse, or the word in this verse is supersedati, meaning satisfaction. So if we want ultimate satisfaction, where do we go? We go to the devotional service of the Lord, bhakti, loving devotional service. That is what can only satisfy us. Sometimes, as devotees, we speak or we say, a devotee is not looking for any result. We know the karmis are looking for sense gratification. We know the jnanis are looking for knowledge and liberation. And we know the Astanga yogis, they are looking for the siddhis that come from the perfection of the mystic yoga process. But what result is the devotee looking for? Actually, a devotee is looking for some result. And what is that result? The devotee is looking, may Krishna be pleased with my service. A devotee is looking for Krishna's pleasure. Because a devotee understands that that is the only way he can become happy and satisfied. I want to read to you two quotations from Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. Srila Prabhupada says in the Prayers of Queen Kunti, chapter 6, no one is thinking of Krishna and how Krishna can be happy. Rather, everyone is thinking of his own happiness. How shall I be happy? How will my children, my community, my society, and my nation be happy? Everywhere we shall find this. Everyone is struggling for existence, not thinking of how Krishna will be happy. Krishna consciousness is very sublime. We should try to understand it from Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and try to engage our senses for the service of the master of the senses, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Then we shall actually be happy. So Prabhupada is making this point here. If we want to be happy, what do? We make sure Krishna is happy. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he said, a devotee does not care about his own happiness and distress. He is simply interested in seeing that Krishna is happy. And for that purpose, he engages in various activities. A pure devotee has no way of sensing happiness except by seeing that Krishna is happy in every respect. If Krishna becomes happy by giving him distress, such a devotee accepts that unhappiness as the greatest of happiness. Those who are materialistic, however, are very proud of material wealth and have no spiritual knowledge, like the Prakriti Sahajyas, regard their own happiness as the aim of life. Some of them aspire to enjoy themselves by sharing the happiness of Krishna. This is the mentality of fruitive workers who want to enjoy sense gratification by making a show of service. So this is a very simple point, but it's a fundamental point. Prabhupada used to give some simple analogies. He says, like this finger. This finger wants to be happy. So this finger will say, I will take food myself. But he doesn't work. The food has to go to the stomach. And when the stomach is fed, the nourishment comes to the finger. In the same way, Prabhupada used to say, the leaves and the twigs, how are they nourished? When the root is nourished. So in the same way, Krishna consciousness is very simple. If we are seeking happiness, if we are seeking satisfaction, what should be our aim? Please Krishna. Make sure Krishna is happy. Because when Krishna is happy, automatically, we become happy. We feel the satisfaction. In the Mahabharata, there was a nice pastime to illustrate this point. The Pandavas, they were exiled to the forest. And when they were exiled, they didn't carry their boga with them. They didn't carry any pots. They had to see in the forest how they can get something to eat. And on top of it, when the Pandavas left for the forest, a whole group of sages started following them. And then Maharaj Yudhisthira asked them, why are you following me? He said, we can't live without you. The kingdom is empty without you. We want to come with you. Then Maharaj Yudhisthira said, but if you come with us, that means you are our guest. We have to take care of you. We have to feed you. So that's not practical for you to come with us. Some of the sages said, no, don't worry. You pray to the sun god, and he will make some arrangement for you. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, he offered some nice prayers to the sun god, and then the sun god came and said, okay, I understand your dilemma, and I'll give you a solution. I'm going to give you this Akshay Patra, this pot. And this pot, it will automatically provide you with a meal, a nice meal for the day. But there's only one condition. Draupadi should be the last person to take, because after she's taken and taken rest, then this pot will not produce any more food. So Duryodhana was once plotting against the Pandavas. And Durvasa Muni and his entourage once came to Astinapur. So Duryodhana, he pleased Durvasa very nicely. And Durvasa asked him, can I offer you any wish of yours? And then Duryodhana said, yes, I have a wish. I'd like you to go to the place where Pandavas are staying and request them to provide you with your meal. But only make this request after Draupadi is eaten and taken some rest. And Durvasa said, oh, fine, we can do that. I'd like to see the Pandavas anyway. So Durvasa and his whole entourage went to where the Pandavas were living. And there Yudhisthira saw him coming with his disciples. So went quickly, received him very nicely, and said, you go now and take your bath. And when you finish taking your bath, you come back and you take prasadam in our ashram. So Durvasa said, fine. So Yudhisthira went back to Draupadi and says, Durvasa and his whole army are here, his entourage. Can you please make the meal available? And then Draupadi said, oh no, I've already eaten. Jai Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki jai. Jai Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Anuman ki jai. Jai Shri Shri Gornita ki. She said, I've already eaten. So the pot cannot produce and I have no ingredients. So this was a great dilemma, because they knew if Durvasa was displeased, he would curse them and something very, very horrible would happen to them. So in that condition, Draupadi took shelter of Krishna. And she offered some beautiful prayers to Krishna, saying, Krishna, we are in this dilemma, what should we do? And then Krishna was in Dwaraka at that time. He said immediately he came to where Draupadi was and in distress. And she said, yes, it's Draupadi, I'm very hungry. I'm very hungry. Can you prepare me something? Give me something to eat. He said, no, I can't. I've taken already and this pot which produces our meal is empty. And on top of that, we are in a precarious situation because Durvasa Muni is going to take his bath and is going to come to take his meal and there's nothing. What to do? So Krishna says, no, 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 I'm hungry. You got to give me something. Where's the pot? So Draupadi said, the pot is there, but it's empty. Krishna said, bring the pot. So Draupadi brought the pot. Yeah? And when she brought the pot, Krishna looked inside. And in the pot, he found one grain. He took that grain and he put it in his mouth. And when Krishna put this grain in his mouth, the sages who were taking bath, who were hungry and were about to depart to take their meals, suddenly they felt so full and satisfied. And then they thought to themselves, what are we going to do now? We don't feel like eating. We have no appetite. So they made a plan to go away. And Maharaj Yudhisthira, he came looking, you know, seeing this dilemma. He said, where's everybody? And they asked someone who said, they said, oh, they left. They said they were full. So this story illustrates this very important principle. When Krishna is pleased, everyone becomes pleased. When Krishna is satisfied, everyone is satisfied. So the devotees, they don't search for their own happiness. They don't make endeavors for their own happiness. They try to consider only how we can be pleased Krishna. How Krishna can be pleased by our service. So Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated. So in one sense, we can explain the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness in this simple. So in this verse I quoted, two words are mentioned there. Ahoituki, apratihata. This devotional service should be unmotivated and uninterrupted. That's the qualification. So someone may ask the question, what are the motivations? Generally, the motivations are described by the acharyas and the scriptures to be the endeavors, the prayasa, karma prayas, the endeavor for karma or fruit of results. Then there is jnana prayasa, the endeavor for knowledge. That means we serving Krishna for knowledge, or we serving Krishna for some fruit of activity, or siddhi prayasa, looking for some powers, siddhic powers. But generally, devotees, they are not so bewildered by this. Devotees, they have a different challenge. Srila Sanatan Goswami and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes Sanatan Goswami's Hari Bhakti Vilas. He says, for a devotee, the motivation is pratishta prayas, the endeavor for name and fame. And quoting Sanatana Goswami, who says, even if one can give up all material desires, the desire for fame is very difficult to give up. This desire for fame, which is compared to stool, is the root cause of all anarthas. Therefore, one should carefully avoid touching the stool-like desire for fame. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, commenting on this verse, he says, this instruction is extremely serious. The devotee should follow this exclusive duty with special care. So, a devotee, all of us, actually what we're seeking is love, affection, and understanding. Sometimes, mistakenly, we think that this love, affection, and understanding will come when we become famous. But that's an illusion. No famous person, no person through fame has ever got love, understanding. It's never come. So therefore, the acharyas, three of our acharyas have given advice and recommendations to cure this desire for pratishtha, name and fame. Srila Rupa Goswami has given the advice. He says, a devotee, just try and find a few friends, maybe 5 friends, and cultivate very nice, deep relationships with these few friends. And through this cultivation of these relationships, you will get all the love, understanding that you seek. So, and therefore in the Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami gives this advice, the Tati, Prita Grinati. He gives all of these 6 loving exchanges between devotees. Srila Vishnava Chakravarti Thakur has said, the advice he's given is, always remember who is the commander in chief. Meaning, always remember in our circumstances that Srila Prabhupada is the commander in chief. And he is the person should get all the fame. He is the person that deserves all the fame. Whatever attributes and assets we've got in our Krishna consciousness is simply a manifestation of Srila Prabhupada's grace. If we have some knowledge, that knowledge has only come to us through Srila Prabhupada. Before Srila Prabhupada, we knew nothing. It's only through Srila Prabhupada that we have some knowledge. And we see whatever assets we've got, it comes through the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. And lastly, Raghunath Das Goswami explains, the devotee should see the flickering nature of this fame. Fame comes and fame goes. We can see this in the world, the history of the world. There were so many people that were famous. But soon as, sometimes footballers, they become so famous. But after the age of 30, their capabilities decrease and they are forgotten. Famous movie stars had so much of fame, or singers. But as soon as they become old or they lose their voice, the world forgets them. So fame is very flickering. It has no substance. It has no lasting duration. So we should not be disturbed by such fame. Then Srila Prabhupada talks about perfection in different ways. I wanted to speak about, you know, so many ways that Prabhupada describes perfection in the form of surrender, perfection in the form of remembrance, perfection in the form of rasa. It's also nicely described what perfection is. But I'll briefly go through some of these points. So in terms of surrender, Prabhupada says, and as we described, one cannot come to the point of wanting to please Krishna unless one comes to the point of full surrender. And that full surrender has been described as, in the verse, the 6 angas. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam rakshis titi vishvaso goptitre varanam tata atma nikshepa karpanya. So those are, that's the definition of surrender, full surrender. And there are 6 angas or 6 limbs to full surrender. The first one is accepting that which is favorable. The second one is rejecting all that is unfavorable. Third one is seeing Krishna as one's maintainer. The fourth one is seeing Krishna always as one's protector. The fifth one is humility. And the last one is full surrender. So if we analyze these six angas, you see they correspond to three of our faculties: the mind, the intelligence, and the ego. So the function of the mind is to accept and reject. So the mind is always accepting and rejecting. So when one surrenders to Krishna, one says, okay, mind, I've had enough. Right? I've had enough of you deciding what's good, what's bad. From this point onwards, I don't decide what's good and what's bad. Krishna and his devotees and the guru decides. So one surrenders. The second one is, Krishna is one's maintainer and one's protector. And that's the function. The function of the intelligence is to make plans. What is good for me? And I plan and I scheme. And generally, those plans are in the context of one's maintenance and protection. So the devotee says, okay, my maintenance, my protection, I put it in your hands, Krishna. So one surrenders his intelligence to Krishna. And the last one is the ego. One completely gives up the ego in the form of humility and full surrender in terms of one's mind, body, and words. So that is what's full surrender. And it's only at the point of full surrender that one reaches the point of perfection. This surrender is a journey. Generally, it takes time. And it's not achieved overnight. But it's something that a devotee, a destination a devotee has to reach this point of perfection. So I think I'll have to stop here, although there's more to say. Time's limited. I'll take any questions or comments.